The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Welcome to another weekend bonus episode of the Tech Meme Ride Home. I'm Brian McCullough. Well, I mentioned it a couple weeks ago, but Tesla has had quite the month. Maybe one of the banner months of its entire life as a company. So no better time than now to check in on the world of Elon Musk, and to do so with Rob Maurer of the always excellent Tesla Daily Podcast. Why did Tesla's stock shoot to the moon earlier this month? Why did it come back down a bit and then inch back towards the moon later on this month? What are the fundamentals behind that excellent earnings report? And is this it? Have the Tesla bulls finally won? Such a fascinating, fascinating company. And
for contingency purposes, I'm going to say up front that we're recording the afternoon of February 14th, Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day, Rob.
Yeah, you as well.
I'm trying to come up with some Valentine's joke analogy or something about what we're about to talk about. But you know what? I feel like every time we talk, it's mainly just me being like, "Okay, Rob, what the heck just happened?" before we get to the stock price and everything that happened this month, we should probably, I'd like you to walk me through as best you can the earnings call, and specifically, not the earnings call, but the earnings report. Specifically, mm-hmm. Like, what were the key drivers? What did people hear that everyone thought was so good that I need to understand about what happened?
Sure. Yeah. And I think for that, it's probably best to go back kind of two earnings reports ago. I don't think we've spoken since then, but that's really, that's really when the stock started to take off. Was after the Q3 delivery and production report, and then the earnings report after that. So basically what Tesla has demonstrated in the last, 6 months or so is proof of concept of the business. And that's been the big reason that the stock has appreciated in my mind. So this year they delivered, 367,000 vehicles. They turned profitable in the second half of the year. So both in Q3 and Q4, they showed strong profits. That's always been, the knock on Tesla is, they've grown revenue significantly over time, vehicle deliveries significantly over time, but they haven't been able to be profitable because of the high growth rate that they've had. But, that's been a knock on them. So this year, the Model 3 in volume was happening throughout the course of the year. And with that happening, they finally, covered their fixed costs and things like that and flipped the switch into profitability, demonstrating that they can be, a volume producer of electric vehicles, and that is a sustainable business model. So Wall Street obviously likes that. It removes a lot of risk when that is demonstrated, and it allows people to start to get excited about, what the future may hold for Tesla. So I think that's the big thing that came through, in the last couple of earnings reports. And specifically, Tesla has surprised on the gross margin line. I think a lot of people were expecting, even Tesla bulls, for example, were expecting, slower growth in margins, and in Q3 they definitely jumped up, and that was allowed Tesla to deliver that surprise profit that then continued on through Q4.
Do we know what the reason is for that, like why margins are holding up?
I think it's just that they're getting to the stage now where the Model 3 production is, at like 7,000-8,000 per week, and because they're at that high of volume, historically the last 18-24 months or so, they've been ramping up from anywhere to 100 a week to, 1,000 a week, 5,000 per week. And now at this level, they're finally able to, get enough margin per vehicle at that high of volume where it's starting to cover those fixed costs.
Well, and that's the other thing. I mean, I feel like at least one of the times we talked about before, it was, we spoke together, it was around the time where it's like, can we get these cars out the door like we promised? And so like, is that also just completely off the table now? Like the production is what was promised and what was hoped for all this time?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's necessarily quite to what was promised. I mean, Elon sort of famously back in, I think, 2017 said that they would have, you know, he pretty much guaranteed they'd get to 10,000 Model 3s produced per week, I think sometime in, you know, 2019 or so. And as I said, we're around 7,000-8,000 per week now. So they're not quite to what Elon had hoped for back then, but there are good reasons for that. They've basically adjusted their strategy a little bit in terms of where they wanted to produce the Model 3. So the opportunity opened up in Shanghai to do a 100% wholly owned factory there, which is a first for any foreign automaker in the country. So what that means is historically people have had to go in and do joint ventures where a Chinese company would own 50% of the company, the foreign automaker would own 50% of the company. Shanghai actually opened it up for Tesla and changed their regulations to allow Tesla to be 100% wholly owned. So with that on the table, they decided to take advantage of that and accelerate their plans to build a factory in China. So over the last, you know, 13, 14 months, they've been working on that. And they actually went from breaking ground in China in like January 7th of 2019 to producing vehicles in the exact same year. So going from nothing to actually production in less than a year, which is really unprecedented at, you know, with this sort of a product and with this sort of manufacturing. So with that, they decided to, instead of investing more capital expense into production in the U.S. in Fremont, California, where they have their factory, they decided to just maximize the output that they could get out of what they've already spent there and shift some of that investment into China. So that pushed back that 10,000 per week goal a little bit, but they should get there within the next few months now.
What about the lineup mix, the product mix? Like, I think again, one time we spoke, it's about like, okay, the Model 3 is coming through, the plan working out that, you know, a mid-range car, will really pull the levers and has that been working out? Is there something that I'm not aware of in terms of like, oh yeah, this, you know, the entire portfolio is hitting all the marks that we expected there?
I would say definitely on the Model 3 line, I think, you know, production has been really solid. It's maybe not what Elon once said, but it's still ahead of, you know, what Wall Street expected. So last quarter,
I'm asking more about sales though. And like, because were you just talking about production?
Yeah. So sorry. A lot of times I think of it in terms of production because Tesla, you know, pretty much is able to sell everything that they make, especially for the case of the Model 3. When we last spoke, one of the things that was hurting Tesla at the time was Model S and X demand had fallen a little bit. Mm-hmm. So around Q1, for example, they delivered only 12,000 of those vehicles compared to 27,000 the quarter before. So a really sharp drop off. And that was one of the reasons the stock took such a hit, you know, earlier on in 2019. But that has rebounded. So in Q4, for example, on Model S and X, they sold 20,000. So demand has risen there again as they've made some updates to the vehicles. And then with Model 3, yeah, demand is super strong there. They still have, you know, 6 to 8 week delivery wait times in the U.S. right now for new orders, and very little inventory. Their inventory levels are actually the lowest that they've been in about 4 years. So on the demand side, things are looking as strong as ever too, which is another reason, yeah, the stock is reacting strongly.
Well, yeah, let's not put it off any further. You know, look, what a crazy concept. A company that is demonstrating profitability, not just path to profitability or profitability someday or theoretical. Mm-hmm. And you pointed out that Tesla stock had been on a tear before that. I think like, what was it, like October, it was still under $300 or whatever. And so that even in January before the earnings, it had been, I don't know, tripling or something. But
yeah, I mean, back in June, the stock was $177 a share. Mm, so in 9 months or so, you know, we've quadrupled essentially, even slightly more.
Right. I think it's around 800 right now as we're talking. Mm-hmm. I mean, even that's a long way from the, you know, 420 funding secured level, you know?
Right.
Now, I think I actually haven't had a chance to listen to your show recently, but I saw in the show notes, like, and I heard some things also too. In this run up, this is a twofold question, because, you know, from someone not paying attention every day, you're like, well, this is a classic short squeeze. But then I also mm-hmm. was seeing some things on Twitter about, like, and I think even one of your show notes hinted at, like, yeah, there's some really odd behavior, especially as we're like cresting $945 or something like that. So tell me, what you can about, and you know, we're not finance professionals or whatever, but like the stock's performance and what we think we know about what's going on there.
Sure. I would say that short interest definitely plays into it. So just like a quick brief on that. Basically, what short selling is people will borrow shares from people that actually own shares, and then they'll resell them in the market and hope to buy them back later for a lower price, profiting on that difference. So basically a bet that the stock is going to go down. And historically, Tesla has had really high short interest, meaning a lot of people betting against it. And what that does, it creates extra shares into the market, which has the same effect as dilution, essentially, because there are extra shares out there that need to be purchased. And, you know, basic supply and demand, that causes the price to be a little bit lower. So what we've seen over the last 6 months or so is short interest has fallen pretty significantly, not to the level that I would necessarily call it a short squeeze, like we saw, you know, years ago with Volkswagen and Porsche, kind of when that whole merger thing sort of happened. The stock shot up, I don't know, like 300% in a couple of days. It's not really to that level, but the short interest has definitely fallen. So we're at about 22.5 million shares sold short right now versus, you know, 6-9 months ago, it was in the 40 million range. So that essentially takes, you know, 20 million shares out of the market, which can definitely have a positive impact on the stock, again, for that same supply and demand reason. And then I think the other thing you're talking about is just potentially a little bit of, you know, manipulation that can happen in the stock market. I think probably don't want to get necessarily too much into that because that's more day-to-day type of stuff and
or even
more speculative. Yeah.
How do you make a password that's strong enough so no one will guess it and it's impossible for you to forget and do it for 100 different sites and make it so everyone in your company can do the same without ever needing to reset them? Sounds impossible unless you have 1Password. More than any other product I've ever told you about, I can vouch 1,000% for 1Password. I can't live without it. 1Password makes strong security easy for your people and gives you the visibility you need to take action when you need to. Any device, anytime, 1Password lets you securely switch between iPhone, Android, Mac, and PC with convenient features like autofill for quick sign-ins. All you have to remember is the one strong account password that protects everything else. Your logins, your credit cards, secure notes, or the office Wi-Fi password. 1Password's award-winning password manager is trusted by millions of users and over 100,000 businesses from IBM to Slack. It beat out 40 other options to become Wirecutter's top pick for password managers. Right now, my listeners get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/ride for your growing business. That's 2 free weeks at 1Password.com/ride. Don't let security slow your business down. Go to 1Password.com/ride. When you go through airport security, there's one line where the TSA agent checks your ID and another line where a machine scans your bag. The same thing happens in enterprise security, but instead of passengers and luggage, it's end users and their devices. These days, most companies are pretty good at the first part of the equation where they check user identity. But user devices can roll right through authentication without getting inspected at all. In fact, 47% of companies allow unmanaged, untrusted devices to access their data. That means an employee can log in from a laptop that has its firewall turned off and hasn't been updated in 6 months. Or worse, that laptop might belong to a bad actor using employee credentials. Collide finally solves the device trust problem. Collide ensures that no device can log into your Okta-protected apps unless it passes your security checks. Plus, you can use Collide on devices without MDM, like your Linux fleet, contractor devices, and every BYOD phone and laptop in your company. Visit collide.com/ride to watch a demo and see how it all works. That's KOLIDE.com/ride, collide.com/ride. But now, just this week, a new secondary stock offering. Mm-hmm. First of all, again, breezing through your show notes, give me the pros and cons of this for investors, because again, just you know, gliding by at a glance, it's like, well, anytime you do a secondary offering, it's dilutive to existing shareholders. So what's your take on, first of all, if you're a Tesla shareholder, are you happy about this?
So I think there are a couple things to consider. On the Q4 earnings call, Elon and their CFO, Zach Kirkhorn, essentially said that we have no need to raise capital. We're spending capital as quickly as we can. And
so wait. Literally in the earnings call that just happened this week, they said they probably weren't going to raise more capital, and then they immediately raise more capital.
Yep. So 2 weeks ago now at this point, and some circumstances have changed. I mean, the stock is 33% higher now than it was at that time. So, you know, that's a pretty significant difference that can cause you to reconsider. And Tesla moves quickly. Things can change, even with their own projections and things like that, and their own goals and, you know, CapEx plans and all that. So things definitely change quickly. But I would also say the best time to raise capital is when you don't need to, because that's when your share price is going to be the highest. That's when you can get the best terms. So what they've done is they've issued 3 million roughly new shares into the market. They have about 181 million shares outstanding before. This will bring it up to 184 million. So it's only about 1.7% dilution on the company. And they're raising about $2.3 billion from that sale in cash, which should put their cash balance up to about $8.5 billion. And as they said, going forward, they should be free cash flow positive. In 2019, they were free cash flow positive, generating $1 billion in free cash flow. So from here on out, they should continue to grow that cash balance pending, you know, if they have any more aggressive sort of spending plans. So they said they just are using it for general balance sheet purposes to strengthen the financial, you know, standing of the company, which does make sense, I think, because they can get, you know, better credit ratings, better debt terms and things like that, and reduce risk if there's a recession. So there are a lot of benefits to that, especially at this time where we're, you know, at all-time highs where Tesla's got $140 billion market cap, you know, the second most valuable automaker, things like that.
I'm sure you've seen this take, but this was my take as soon as I saw that there was going to be a secondary offering. Why only what did you say, 2.3?
2.3, yep.
Well, because, all right, you know, if we're assuming that it's not a short squeeze, all we know right now is people want to buy Tesla stock.
Mm-hmm.
So give it to them. why only 2.3? Like, it seems like you could do 5 or 10 or something crazy.
Yeah, I'm sure there would be, you know, demand for that sort of an offering in the market right now. I think the thing for Tesla is they're trying to dilute as little as possible over time. And historically, you know, they have added shares as they've needed to raise capital. And that's been one of the criticisms on the share prices. You know, the share price is never actually going to grow because they're just going to keep diluting and adding capital. But now that they are free cash flow positive, they don't need as much capital, and they can also, you know, access more capital through debt as their financial position has grown stronger. So they don't really have, as they said on the call, they don't really have that much of a need to raise more than what they have here. And even this is, I think, more of an opportunistic type of a raise than something that they really actually needed to do.
How about this take? And stop me if you've heard this. You know, Matt Levine, he has a newsletter and Bloomberg Opinion. If you haven't heard it, let me read it to you a little bit.
Sure.
He's like, you know, if I were running Tesla, and this is part of why I'm not, he's like, I'd probably announce a stock buyback program today also, because why not? But he wants to go bigger. He's like, sell $10 billion of stock today, use $8 billion of it to build cars and stuff, but then set aside $2 billion and use it on stock buybacks if the stock dips below, you know, $500 or whatever. Because he's like, you know, Musk has said before, we're subject to wild swings in our stock price that can be a major distraction for everyone working at Tesla. So why not make these wild swings work for you? Why not, like, when the stock is too high, sell more stock. When the stock is too low, buy it back. Like, then all of a sudden you wouldn't have to worry about the crazy back and forth. Like, it's insane to think about Tesla doing stock buybacks right now. But again, you know, make hay while the sun shines.
Yeah, I think with that sort of strategy, I understand the logic behind it, but I don't think the brokerages and the underwriters of those sort of deals would, you know, look too fondly on Tesla 1 month selling a bunch of shares into the market and then, you know, the next month coming back and buying those shares back cheaper. I don't think they would be very appreciative of that. And it would also just be weird to sort of be, you know, trading your own company like that.
Yeah, so, but everybody trades their own company right now. Actually, that's a larger point in his newsletter that day. It's like that, you know, essentially
But most big public companies now use the stock market as a way to return capital to investors.
Sure.
So in a way, and listen, again, neither of us do this for a living, so we don't know what we're talking about. But I don't know that it would be that insane to the bankers, because everybody else does.
I think a lot of times that's one direction, though. Either you're selling shares and raising capital, or you're buying shares back and returning capital. Like Apple, for example, they've had huge share buybacks, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars over the last few years, and that's definitely helped their stock price. But they're not then, you know, 1 month going back and selling more shares just because the stock, you know, went up. So I think it's generally one direction, and I think the multi-direction trading aspect, maybe there are companies that are doing it, not any that I'm aware of, but I think that would probably be frowned upon. And, you know, Tesla's already under enough financial scrutiny that I don't think they need to add that.
That is true.
One thing I will say on that point, though, they do offer convertible debt, and they do have sort of call options to hedge against that convertible debt, where if the stock price is, you know, high when that debt needs to be converted, Tesla's hedged against that. So they are doing a little bit of that more as a hedge than to minimize dilution than actual like trading, but they are, you know, taking advantage of some of those financial instruments.
Is this vindication or early vindication or complete vindication for Tesla bulls like you? I assume you would consider yourself a Tesla bull, right?
Yes. Yes. And I should mention I am a stockholder as well.
Yes,
so.
Yes, yes, yes. So like, have you all been just, you know, clicking your heels,
celebrating, pouring the champagne?
Yeah.
Frankly, to me, this seems long overdue, and I know the stock price doubling or tripling in 3 months seems crazy, and it feels like, you know, a short squeeze, something like that. But if you look at the numbers, Tesla back in 2014, so 6 years ago, they had a share price of $280 per share. So we've only, you know, tripled from that level over 6 years, which is nothing crazy. And Tesla's revenue when the share price was $280 per share was $3.2 billion in 2014. And in 2020, they'll do $32 billion or more. So they've 10x'd revenue over that period of time, and the share price has only tripled. So with dilution, the market cap has gone up a little bit more than that. But the point is, just because it's compressed into this one small period of time doesn't mean that Tesla's necessarily overvalued. I mean, you can definitely make arguments for that. I don't buy into those arguments. But yeah.
Are you worried that, though, maybe because it's only natural, even if you're a total bull, the stock can get ahead of itself.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'm hearing you say that long term you still think there's plenty of room to go, but for right now, maybe it's gone too far. And we saw it go up and come back a bit, although it's creeping back up again now.
Mm-hmm. And that's the tricky thing. Like, it, you know, you always want to try and time things if you're, you know, trading in and out. For me, most of my investment is, you know, 10-year plus time horizon, just because I think the potential Tesla has to become a $1 trillion market cap company is very high. So for me, I'm not interested in sort of like selling out my position here just because I think there's a chance that, you know, things might stagnate or dip back, because it doesn't really matter too much. Yeah, maybe I could buy them back cheaper a little bit later, but on the other hand, what if I can't? What if something, you know, what if some good news happens and the stock goes up to, you know, $1,300 a share, and then I just lost, you know, 30% of my shares or something like that? So you could take that risk. It's just not something that I'm personally interested in, because even at this valuation, I still think Tesla's undervalued for the 5-10 year time horizon.
Real quick, is there any coronavirus risk with supply chain, with the factory in China? Any reporting on that?
Yeah, definitely. So there is some downtime. They had about a week to a week and a half of downtime at the factory, unplanned due to coronavirus. And there's some risk in the supply chain too, of course, as, you know, that sort of impacts all businesses there. So there's definitely risk. And I think that, you know, maybe is a factor in why they chose to raise capital, is maybe just hedging against some of that risk a little bit in case it stays out there for a more long period of time. So there's going to be an impact. That being said, the production out of Gigafactory Shanghai right now, which is their, you know, Shanghai facility, is much lower than it is in Fremont. So I think the bigger risk is actually within that supply chain. If they produce no vehicles out of Gigafactory Shanghai this quarter, it's not going to be a huge hit for the company. Yeah, they would have liked to have had that production, but it's not something that's going to, you know, cause a huge swing financially.
In 2023, just 10 vulnerabilities accounted for over half of the incidents responded to by our sponsors today, Arctic Wolf Incident Response. Wouldn't you love to know how to take these vulnerabilities off the table and make life more difficult for cybercriminals? That's just one of the essential insights you'll find inside the Arctic Wolf Labs 2024 Threats Report. Authored by their elite team of security researchers, data scientists, and security development engineers, and backed by the data gained from trillions of weekly observations within thousands of unique environments, this report offers expert analysis into attack types, root causes, top vulnerabilities, TTPs, and more. Discover the attack vectors behind nearly half of all successful cybercrimes, why ransom demands climbed 20% from 2023, and find out why 2024 will be an especially volatile year for cybersecurity. Learn more and get your copy now at arcticwolf.com/techmeme. That's arcticwolf.com/techmeme.
Last question, and this is going to be an odd one, and it's almost like a personal one, but I've been talking on the show recently about, like, I'm sure you're aware of the whole, like, Tesla Q crowd and the Tesla bears. Yeah.
Yes.
And I've been mentioning that in the context of, I feel like that's sort of everywhere now, where, like, you see it in crypto, where there are people that are Bitcoin maximalists, people that are XRP stans, and they fight all the time, and it's this back and forth battle. They can get very heated. It's like everything's partisan now, right? And so it's a weird thing where, like, in this space and in the crypto space and in other spaces, I can still dip my toe in and I have no beef on either side. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious, and this is where it's almost personal, and I don't even know if I'm asking a question here, really. But when you're... because, you know, you're doing this daily. This is your mm-hmm. your livelihood now, like, giving this information to people. When you're involved in a space like this, and it's so vitriolic, and there's... it's not... but people are so invested in being right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
How does that affect you on a daily basis? And then do you... are you gloating against the Tesla Qs right now? You know what I mean? I'm just curious what it's like to be in it. And I'm not being pejorative at all. I'm not saying it's bad in it. But I want to know what it's like.
Yeah, no, it's a really interesting question. I'm just trying to think of how to respond to it. I mean, for me, I've never been one that has been... like, I think, kind of like yourself, I try to be as open-minded as I can, and I'm not one that's out there, you know, poking Tesla Q people on Twitter or anything like that. Like, I pretty much just, you know, do my research, report on what I see, you know, rely on my own analysis. I'm not out there, you know, trying to start arguments or go find people and tell them that they're wrong. I'm really just trying to spread the information that I believe is accurate. That's really what I'm about. So I'm not as heavily involved, definitely aware of Tesla Q, and they're definitely an interesting community. The thing that I would say about them is it's just something to be careful about, because they do a lot of, like, filtering. They're sort of famous now for having this block list on Twitter where if you make any sort of positive comment at all about Tesla, even if it's not related to, like, directly to them, they'll put you on this block list.
Let me interrupt you, because I'm aware of that too. Like, there's famously VC Twitter. Like, if you're not... people always accuse VCs of, and thankfully I'm not one of these people that get blocked, but if you're insufficiently enthused about how tech is changing the world, then you get blocked. And so again, this is sort of the phenomenon that I'm curious about.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask it this way. Like, the Tesla Q people, do you, like, 100% you think you're right? But do you, because when I, okay, again, I'm an outsider. I've mm-hmm. listened to podcast episodes with Tesla bears, and they've made a case, and, you know, it can go all the way to Elon Musk as a fraud and a huckster too, but I've listened to episodes where I'm like, okay, that makes sense to me. The case you just made me think, yeah, Tesla is in trouble. And then I listened to your show and I'm like, no, listen, man, we're only at the early days of this sort of stuff. So I'm curious about, is it when you look at the world just from your perch in Tesla, if I'm not committed, if I can still look at both sides, I'm not asking you if you think the Tesla Q people are delusional, but can you see, it's almost like the political question. Can you still be a moderate?
I absolutely try to. I try to see the other points of view, and I try to approach things with an open mind and, you know, explore the idea that, you know, maybe I'm not right. That's definitely a possibility. You know, there are no guarantees in this, and investing in any single company is high risk. So, it's definitely considered.
Take your time and I'll completely edit this. And, again, this is a difficult one because I don't even know what I'm asking. I just want to know. I'm not so committed to anything, and I'm not saying you're like a zealot or anything. And also you're winning.
Right.
So I find that curious too. Like, what's it like to be on the side that's winning at the moment, you know?
Yeah. I think for me, it's somewhat validating, but at the same time, it's not surprising. I think, you know, I've been following Tesla literally hours every single day since 2013. So 7 years now. And, you know, I have a lot of conviction in the company and what they're building and the inability of the entrenched automakers to be able to compete with them and, you know, some hiccups along the way. But thus far, things have pretty much played out as, you know, we expected back in, you know, those early days. And if you look at sort of how Elon Musk has laid out the plan for the company early on, he said, you know, secret master plan number one, we're going to build an expensive low volume car. We're going to use the profits from that to build a slightly less expensive, you know, slightly more volume car, and then profits from that to build a high volume mass market car. And that's what they've done step by step by step. And it's just been extremely clear. And they've achieved that again, you know, not maybe without some flaws along the way, but largely they've accomplished what they set out to do. And other people just have not been able to compete with that because of, you know, they have entrenched dealerships, they have investment into internal combustion engines, they have organizational structures that are not set up to be able to build something from the ground up anymore because the supply chain is so, you know, heavily parted out and things like that, where it's more of a package deal. You're sort of packaging things together versus creating things on your own, where Tesla's all vertically integrated. There's all these lists of things about why Tesla should be successful. And really the only counter argument has been, you know, Tesla's not profitable or Tesla's a fraud. And Tesla's now answering those questions and showing that they can be profitable and that the demand is there for these vehicles. So as those questions get answered, that's why we're seeing the stock price increase, because people are starting to realize that the position that Tesla is in is just extremely strong, and the position that other people are in is, you know, tenable at best. So I don't know that that necessarily answers your question.
No, it does. It does. Because there's not really an answer there. It's more, I just want to understand the psychology. And, you know, it's a weird thing. It occurs to me that, you know, as opposed to politics or other spaces where everything is so, you know, arguing about whether the new Star Wars movie was good or not. Like, there's no way to prove. But then for things like stocks or like numbers, the only other analogy is sports. Like, if you pick a team and your team wins the Super Bowl and you've been saying for 20 years that we're the greatest team in the world, well, it's provable because they won the Super Bowl, you know?
Yeah.
So it's interesting that the math will prove or disprove or whatever eventually.
Absolutely. The math will. And that's kind of why I said at the beginning is just like, I'm really just about reporting on things and looking at the data and analyzing it as best I can. And ultimately, you know, I feel like that's going to end up somewhere. And if it doesn't, like, there's probably something that's along the way going to show that I'm wrong. And then, you know, I'll adjust my point of view, but it's just sort of that day-to-day reevaluation. So that's why I think I'm not out there, you know, gloating or anything like that. I'm more just focused on like, all right, where are we at today? What's new? What's different? You know, are things still on track, and where do we go from here?
Rob, Tesla Daily podcast, right? That's where you do this every day.
Tesla Daily, any podcast app. I just got on YouTube too, so you can find me on YouTube. Just search for Tesla Daily podcast.
Mm-hmm.
This is a rare opportunity from one of our fellow listeners to join a startup still in stealth mode at the co-founder level. As the co-founder, you would receive substantial equity in the company rather than being hired on as a regular employee on payroll. This is a startup on a mission to eradicate the obesity epidemic and reduce the insane sugar consumption in the U.S. So it's a startup looking to put a meaningful dent in the universe. Persons right for this role would have at least 10 years of experience in data science at either an e-commerce, food, or retail company. They'd be familiar with fuzzy logic, deployed services, and apps on the cloud, and have an advanced degree in mathematics, statistics, or a similar field. If this is you, you would have the opportunity to lead the development of proprietary machine learning, optimization algorithms, natural language processing, and Elasticsearch, and build a scalable and modern database with as many as 500 million, billion with a B, data points. Moreover, you would be able to help bootstrap the company, develop a POC, and raise capital to take it to the next level. As I say, this is the sort of opportunity that these podcast classifieds were designed for. So please, if this is you, follow up by emailing cofounders@icloud.com. What can it hurt to have a conversation? That's cofounders, C-O-F-O-U-N-D-E-R-S, at icloud.com.